Oh yeah, baby. Today is your day. Time to get out there on the run, and have tons of fun. You're listening to Early Call Time. Oh yeah.
Hey there, folks, and welcome to another episode of Early Call Time, the podcast where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. My name is Eli Ash, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Tony Yamanaka. Hey there, Tony. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, buddy. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you? Did you do anything exciting? I mean, so like quick behind the scenes peek, Tony and I talk some when we're not on the podcast. So like, yes, we'd already wished each other a happy new year and whatnot, you know, on text, but I don't think we'd really like caught up much, since we podcasted last almost a month ago now back there in season one. So this is like real time. Like, Tony, what have you been up to over the holidays? Anything exciting?
No, like absolutely nothing exciting. It's just been a lot of staying at home. This is my longest dry January streak ever. So I'm 12 days in, pretty psyched. Yeah, that's about it on the personal front. It's taking a lot of effort to not drink a pint or have a martini given the current state of the world, but all good.
Yeah, I was going to say, how are you not drinking this month?
I don't know, man. A lot of coffee. So we've taken to, we usually ride our bikes to like a beer garden or like open air brewery when we can, like once a week on Saturdays or Sundays. And since we're not doing that, we've taken to just riding to coffee shops. So it's just a substitute. It's an oral fixation of like being out socially and like sipping on something. So it hasn't been that difficult. And since I can only hang out with my wife, like it's pretty easy because we just don't go anywhere most of the time.
Yeah. And you're in Texas, in Minnesota. We are not going anywhere. Like I've gone for like a walk outdoors with a person, and that has been the extent of my, not me and my wife, social interaction. Since May.
Well, it did
Since about October, really, where it's been since anything else. Yeah, I saw some photos. Did Austin shut down? Like in a city like that, like I went to grad school in San Diego, and like there, like when it, like a drop of rain fell from the sky, like everyone forgot how to drive and just like wildly swerved off the road. But like I saw inches of snow in Austin. Like, did the city just like go into lockdown?
Yeah, kind of, but it was, usually it's sleet and ice, right? And that's why everything shuts down. This was like powder snow. So quite the opposite. Like everyone was out, and it was on a Sunday too. So I guess that applies. They were, you know, building snowmen, snowball fights out of a moment of spontaneity with people across the street. It was pretty cool. Super dicey to drive in like two-wheel drive. But other than that, it was totally fine.
Yeah, so everyone, Agatha in the background says Happy New Year as well. She's tapping back in to season two of the podcast, making sure she gets her, you know, credits to build up to her SAG card or something. But yeah, no, the snow in Austin looked pretty incredible. There has been a good amount of snow here in Minnesota too, and we're going to do our obligatory weather talk apparently now. is what we're going to do for our longtime listeners who know that that's really what this podcast is about, is me and Tony talking about the weather. But no, yeah, the holidays were super quiet here in Minnesota. We got our white Christmas. And I, for those of you, as I just referred to, Tony and I have gone like a month since doing this, basically. But I couldn't go a month without making people listen to me talk about race directing. So my big event during that month was that I went on the, oh gosh, I'm blanking on the name of the podcast. But I went on another podcast that we will post in the show notes, a link to. And it was really an interesting experience for me. It was a guy who was looking to, he's got a popular kind of general running podcast, and he was looking to talk to like a major race director about what goes into putting on an event. And well, as I think any of our listeners know, I like think and talk about that a lot, as my wife also knows as well. Much to her chagrin. It was really interesting for me kind of hearing the types of questions that he asked, and then also thinking about framing the responses for a general audience. And it really kind of, for me, I'm not sure I actually landed all of it perfectly in the way that I would have wanted to. And I think it's partially because what we do is so, there's like a huge degree of generalism to it. But there's also like these really niche specific crucial things. And the idea of like describing to someone, hey, how do you put on a race, is like, I don't know. I mean, we just talked for 30 episodes about that last year, and I think we only scratched the surface of what we really get into. So it was the idea of trying to put in like, what's the thing that you can say that is that general concept that also isn't wrong or misdirecting or glossing over something that is a really crucial thing for that general running audience. And it was an interesting challenge for me, but we'll post a link in the show notes and folks can see whether they agree whether I landed it or not. But yeah, it was just really interesting. And again, doing this podcast regularly, talking to folks who, you know, our early risers are all folks who really want to get into the nitty gritty of specific things and talk to, you know, when we talk to people, we talk about the specifics of their event. And it's people who, you know, we don't feel the need to do the high level explainer. And this was really trying to do justice to the specifics and the intricacies of what we do while at the same time doing a high level explainer. And it was hard, and it made me appreciate kind of some of the people who in the industry do that really well, who are the face of the industry to non-industry folks, the, you know, the Daves of the world and the folks who are kind of putting out there to the world sort of the high concept of what we do, but also have the credibility to speak to and really contribute to like the nuances of putting on an event.
Yeah. And you touched on something interesting. So it's kind of, how do you boil this down to make it, I guess, digestible or palatable to people that aren't, as you describe, inside baseball on it? And that's a lot of what you and I were doing over the holiday when we did speak, was just, how do we improve the podcast? How do we get this information out? And then more importantly, how is this information better used to better the industry? So we kicked out a lot of ideas. Just to reiterate, we are reformatting in a certain degree. So the interviews and banter episodes will still exist, but the frequency of them is changing. We're also going to do a better job of maintaining episode lengths as they pertain to both banter and interview episodes. And then my take on this is starting to work with, you know, other organizations on how we can do like quick instructionals on why are corrals released in waves. And we can do a quick 10-minute episode that then races can hopefully borrow, put in their FAQ. So runners can basically understand why we do this from a logistical and operations perspective without having to kind of explain the whole thing in a very intricate and boring way, which is what we love, but is likely not what an average runner would want to hear. So a lot of cool stuff in the pipeline. We are still 100% searching for an awesome partner, aka sponsor, sugar daddy or sugar mama, to help us out with the podcast. We want to get the right microphones to our guests so we have better quality, easier and more fun to listen to from your perspective as well as listeners. So we are all ears, races, anyone. I don't want to start a GoFundMe, but I may have to.
Yeah. And Tony, I think you said we are going to do 10-minute episodes at some point. Yeah, we may try to do 10 minutes. Do you think you and I are going to be able to keep something to 10 minutes? We're at 8 minutes right now, and we just got through talking about the weather.
It totally depends who's speaking. If it's you explaining it, absolutely not. If it's me, we're probably going to hit around 3 minutes, and then you'll have to fill in for 7 and inevitably go over by 20.
Gotcha. And we're still going to do our interviews as well. We got some fun guests lined up. We're really excited to keep talking to the folks who make the industry happen. And I think one of the guests that, you know, we've talked about a little bit and haven't done, and actually has a bit of big news himself, which might make him harder to get on the pod, but is a friend of the pod. Ted the Man at New York Roadrunners has big news. Of course, New York Roadrunners, we've talked about going through a lot of stuff and, you know, kind of doing some reckoning with the way they have done business. And I think actually related to that, but not like driven by that, I think it just might be like this is an environment in which like the current race director felt like he was the right person to keep doing the work. So the current race director is stepping down, and Ted has been the technical director since he's back at New York Roadrunners and is now the race director at NYRR. There is further leadership change happening there beyond that. But something I think that, so I was at a conference once And it was right after Ted got hired back to New York Roadrunners. And someone at New York Roadrunners was talking to me about how they had just hired for that position. And I was like, oh, man, you got someone great. And this person was like, yeah, you know, I've said this to like five people and everyone's been effusive. Does he like pay y'all to say he's great? And I laughed. And it's just like, no, I mean, he's really a great guy who does a lot for the industry. He's active in a lot of industry groups. He's someone who really leads in the space and he's someone who knows his stuff. And he's someone who, when good things happen for, I think a lot of folks in the industry are really happy. So I think a lot of folks in the industry are really happy to see Ted take on the mantle of race director at New York Roadrunners.
Absolutely. One of the nicest, most stand-up guys in the industry, for sure. Always a smile on his face and super well-deserved. It's just so exciting to see folks that are, you know, it's a small industry, but there are definitely circles of people who speak regularly who end up at the same happy hours and, you know, kind of shoot the shit post events or, you know, in between conference sessions. And Ted's always in that mix. So it's just great to see him do well. And I think it was, there was no doubt. It was just a matter of when rather than if.
Yeah. And I will also say too, this is in no way like tokenism on New York Roadrunner's part. He was highly qualified for the job and that's why he's got the job. But I do think it is really good at this point in the industry for us to see a diversifying industry. And Ted has talked a few times about being like the one black guy in the room. And I think for people of color, seeing someone like Ted in a position like this and Ted leading the way in that space saying, hey, other folks, you know, being willing to mentor and have folks follow him. I think it's only for the good for the industry to diversify. Like, longtime listeners know I'm a big baseball fan, and I am really nerdy about the way I follow baseball, which is probably a surprise to no one. And I heard someone who I follow say something that I thought was put really well about how women are just beginning to be hired in some roles. There was just the first female general manager of a Major League Baseball team hired. Certain teams have been hiring female coaches. And the person kind of said a thing where they were like, not to be crass about it, because it is important in its own right for purposes of diversity, but also, isn't just hiring from these underrepresented pools also a market inefficiency? Like, it's a way to make sure you are pulling from a pool of all of the talented people, not just in the case of baseball, all of the talented male people, or in the case of running, all of the talented white people. And yeah, I think it is really crucial that if we want to be the industry we want to be, we pull from all of the most talented people. And so it's great to see a person of color leading, like, I don't know, the greatest marathon in the world.
Yeah, that mentality can carry into the participants who run the race too. So, you know, not a lot of, I guess, cross sections available right now within our demographics of runners. So I think that's a bigger conversation industry-wide, as we've repeatedly stated on this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, Tone, we had a concept for this episode that I think could be fun. I'm not sure that you entirely understand it, so maybe we'll get into that. But is there any other news you want to share, or should we dive into our over-under?
I think we dive into the over-under. And I never cared to understand over under. Let's put it that way. It's a term you hear constantly. I just never looked it up. I'm not like a betting man. The only betting I've done was with Tim and Jess in Vegas playing craps. And that was the
I was going to say, you're a craps guy. Yeah.
I'm a craps guy.
Hey, Vegas,
if you've got Team Bibrave around you and Clemens, Clemens is the ultimate hype guy when it comes to craps, to the point where you're almost like, Nana, you got to keep it down. You cannot be screaming like this in a public place. But yeah, man, that's the extent of like my gambling experience, but it's a blast. So I'm super excited to get into this with you. And for those people that like don't get it, you're probably going to have to explain what the over-under means on the episode, just so, you know, the listeners can understand what we're getting into.
For the listeners, not for
definitely for the listeners.
Yeah. So what we were talking about doing is making some predictions about this year, three of them each, and the prediction being in the form of an over-under proposition. And then each of us having to commit to, I am going to take the over or I am going to take the under on that proposition, and then tracking them throughout the year and seeing which of us was right about the most of these six predictions, each of us getting to make three of them. So like the way an over-under works, like in a basketball game, would be if I have a basketball game and the Houston Rockets are playing the Golden State Warriors, the betting line might be 241 and a half points. And if I bet the over, I would be betting that those two teams, the number of points they score, is more than 241 and a half. And if I bet the under, it would be betting that those two teams combined score fewer than 241 and a half points. So I don't know that we're necessarily looking to do this in a way that we need to add things together. But what I'll do then maybe, Tony, is kind of put out one of my over-unders, and we'll first talk and make sure we understand what the over is and what the under is so that our listeners understand. And then we'll maybe put our predictions out there, and then you'll be able to put yours out there. And after having heard one of mine, let's stop with the charade. You'll be sure that your over under was structured correctly so that you know that we would be able to place bets accurately as we want. So are you okay with me putting one out there and explaining what the over means, what the under means, and then we'll put our predictions out there from there?
Yeah, that's perfect. And surprisingly, all of mine are written to fall within these parameters. I just have to define one more general thing into a narrower gotcha. Thing. But yeah, we're good.
So my first one speaks to, like, my wife and I would say about twice a year, something comes up where she like makes the mistake of asking me about running. And this will lead to about twice a year, this leads to a discussion where I ask her, and she now is at the point where she gets this, I'm going to need a different question, but it leads to, all right, you know the answer to this because she asked a thing that you would know if you could list the top 10 US marathons. And I'm like, just go tell me, like, you know the answer to this. Tell me what the 10 largest US marathons are. And there are kind of like some increments within those top 10 largest US marathons. There are like seven mega races of around 20,000 or larger. And then in the bottom three slots in that, there are always, well, I've now directed two of the races, but it's some combination of Houston, Philadelphia, CIM, Grandma's has been there, Twin Cities in Motion, a few of those races as well, closer to that like 9 to 6,000 range. So I'm asking a question where it really ties to those top seven marathons. And the question that I'm asking for you to take the over or the under on is those are major events, and they are crowded and they are clustered when they are at full capacity, those seven marathons of 20,000 ish or over. I'm not sure we're going to be back at full capacity at all of those major races this year. I'm not sure we're going to be super near full capacity. We may at some, we may not at others, or we may be at different fractions of capacity. So the over-under I am interested about is whether there will be six US marathons of larger than 10,000 runners, finishers, next year. So if you're taking the over, you are saying there will be six, more than six. And if you are taking the under, you are saying there will be five or fewer. And you could take push. I wouldn't recommend it. You almost always want half the field over one specific thing. But you could say, you know, I'm going to take a push, which would be I'm predicting there will be exactly six.
I think it's going to be under.
Do you have a reasoning behind that?
Honestly, just seeing how the vaccine is rolling out is probably the biggest concern. Assuming we're supposed to be vaccinated, you and I, our age group, say April. Mm-hmm. And my parents, 1B, should have already been vaccinated, and they're not even able to schedule. So I'm assuming we're going to be operating off of a 60-day delay. So that puts us into early July, when we can start receiving, with a gap. So that puts us into August. Yeah, that's about right. That's why.
Yep. No, and I think part of the reason you're right, too, is, you know, I named, hey, there are seven out there. And two of those seven have actually, one of them is Disney, which is usually right around this time of year. and to the best of my knowledge, isn't happening. And then another one is LA, which would normally be coming up in March, and Southern California being what it is right now, it has also, I believe, already rescheduled, but I don't think Southern California being what it is right now is going to be at full capacity. This is not the same as saying that I don't expect this race to happen. By the way, I think there are some rescheduling opportunities later in the year. I think there are reduced field capacities. But I think if you look at what those races are, you look at the rest of them, they're in the later part of the year. And I mean, quite frankly, it relies a lot on international travel. But like one of these races is Honolulu and it's in December. It's like, I actually think there's a pretty good chance that Honolulu is over 10,000. I think a lot of things that are happening with some of these fall majors, I know things are tough in Massachusetts right now. I'm not sure whether Boston will be at a full field, but I'm not unconvinced that something over 10,000 can happen for a lot of these fall races. Boston having already rescheduled to the fall, there being Marine Corps, you know, these other events that you would see, the World Marathon Majors. I think we're pretty likely there, but I think for me, I take the under as well, really on the idea that two of them in LA and in Disney are very likely to cross that 10,000 threshold. And of course, there is the possibility like that, oh, it would be a year where Philadelphia surges and gets over 10,000. They've been trending in a pretty positive direction. Well, this isn't the year where that's going to happen. I don't think too many people are going to be trying to blow through field size records. And then also just outside of that, Philadelphia is a fall race, and a lot of other major races rescheduling to the fall, I think would make it really difficult for a new race to break through to be that potential sixth in addition to those other five. So yeah, I am with you there on the under on six races of six U.S. marathons of over 10,000 taking place in 2021. So Tony, do you get how this works? Do you think our listeners get how this works, Tony?
I think you've been pretty crystal clear on it. I think we're going to have to workshop two of mine, but it should be pretty easy. I'll go with the one that I know works. So my first over under is in the year 2021, I think there will only be two World Marathon majors held with a limited public field.
Oh, wow. So the statement, the over-under is two.
Correct.
Of World Marathon majors with basically you're saying, so Tokyo happened this last year, elite only. London happened this last year, elite only. You're saying a cut up from that, not with a public field,
even if it's limited. So 5,000 gotcha. People.
So I actually think that Berlin is really pretty likely in September based on the approvals that they got this past year, you know, and some other races, non-Berlin, that were, you know, getting pretty close to getting DS, and also in the way that Germany has managed the pandemic. I don't think it's a guarantee, but I think there is some reasonable likelihood there. I also think fall in the US is, you know, like not necessarily going to be at full capacity, but I think there is some reasonable likelihood that whether it be at a half of capacity or some other fraction, that certainly a lot of these majors are, you know, moving forward.
Well, here's my question.
Is there a minimum, Tony, that you're setting on this size of this field? Like, so let's define the parameters. So the over-under is two. Are you saying with a public field, like, what if there are 100 charity runners? That's not the public field. That's 100 big virtual fundraisers. Is the minimum threshold you're setting here 1,000, 5,000, 2,500?
Well, it's a World Marathon major, so you have to consider, like, when is the juice worth the squeeze to actually do this of this scale versus just doing a looped elite field? So I was thinking in the, like, 5,000 to 7,000. Range.
Gotcha. So yeah, 5,000.
Okay.
Yeah, I think a 5,000 person public field, again, I feel good about Berlin. I know US events are, you know, moving forward. It's not like anything's guaranteed, but that would be such a reduced fraction of capability, of capacity, excuse me. Tokyo has already rescheduled to the fall, I believe.
October 17th.
As has London.
So we have like super duper October with Tokyo, London, Chicago, and then
eventually Boston.
Boston's up fall 2021. Berlin is in September, and then we got New York in November. So, you know, I went through this list and I was like, well, what's the likelihood? Like Tokyo's got their stuff together. They've got the Olympics. It's almost like a we have to do it, and we're going to prepare so heavily to get it done. Yeah, that one was like that one's likely.
Yeah, I'm gonna take the over on this, by the way, Tony. Yeah. Like, if, okay, yeah, I have. Yeah, but yeah, no, keep talking through yours. I'm curious to hear your thinking on this.
Berlin, and New York were the two for me that I was like, ooh, these could maybe happen. Those are the two that I have a feeling may. Berlin, because it's European and they have their shit in order. But also, if it's EU, then a lot of people can be traveling if they start loosening up, and then you can see a flare, right? And then New York, just because of the timeline. Like, clearly, A, Ted is there, obviously. And then B, it's in November. So they have the longest roadway. Chicago, as much as I want to go back to Chicago, it's in a pretty dicey hotspot, in my opinion, in terms of, you know, what's going on. It's a huge, huge field. London, I don't think we even have to talk about London. the UK right now is a little bit of a dumpster fire when it comes to COVID and COVID management.
I just don't know that the specifics of any given race, like, I know I was speculating about Berlin and a little about not World Marathon Majors, but Honolulu and some others. But for me, basically what this was is I don't know the specifics of any given one race. I would actually say it is quite likely that not all the World Marathon Majors happen with a large public field, but that some of them do. And I don't know that if you made me guess on any given one, that my guess would be that accurate. But overarchingly, with the threshold set at 2, I think the over makes a lot of sense. It sounded like you were taking the over as well, Tony, right?
I'm hoping I take the over. And I mean, consider this. I'm not saying that CEM or London or any like Roadrunners cannot produce this stuff safely. I'm considering it from where we've been, which is this isn't in our hands. So I'm looking at the health of that city or country, whatever it may be, and seeing the likelihood of the progress to where you can make a safe return to racing as approved by XYZ.
Yeah. And I think just at 2, again, not knowing which ones it will or won't be, I take the over. And so that was your line. It was over under. It sounds like we both took the over. If we had set that number at 3.5, I would have had a harder time making that call.
Well, a 50-50 decision is never, that's not exciting. That's gambling, you know, like let's get a real payout here.
Yeah. But we might've ended up on different sides of that one. I don't know which side I would have ended on.
Yeah.
So I've got a big one here, and I like agonized over both numbers in this one. You want to know what? No, I agonize so much that I'm going to do that one last. I'm going to jump to one where I'm going to do over under a little differently. It's actually going to be before after. Okay.
Okay.
And the date is May 1st. And it is May 1st as the before or after date for the first U.S. road race of over 10,000. The first one, not a marathon. We have some major spring events that are coming up. Sure, some have rescheduled and done some things.
It's going to be over.
We've also seen some states return to races in that 3,000-4,000 range right now. And so when you say over, that's the after.
It's going to be later than May 1st.
Later than May 1st. So I don't have anything specific in mind. And some of these events have, I'm sure, that I don't even know of, have already, like, postponed. And I'm like, oh yeah, it would be this race in Florida or this race in Arizona or whatever. And I just haven't been paying close enough attention to know that they've like already rescheduled themselves to September. But I've started having this thing happen where I'll like see a race result and go look and be like, oh, I didn't even know that race was happening. And it's 3,000 or 4,000, this race in Florida or, you know, some other place like that. So I am not sure.
Hi, not sure. I'm Tony.
I fall on this. That's what people listen to the pod for. But, you know, we need to have some differentiators here. And this is so far from a prediction of what race it will be. But I am going to say, likely at some point, it will surprise me when we get close to a major race that is in April that hasn't rescheduled yet. And maybe it's even a race that isn't a marathon and that would usually be a little bit below that. And the thing I want to make clear too, this is about in-person finishers. This isn't about a race that goes hybrid and has between in-person and virtual over 10,000. This is in-person finishers. But yeah, I just can't talk myself into May 1st. I'm going to take the after as well. No differentiator. So would this have been different, Tony, if I had said June 15th?
No, and I think I'll explain why. So my second one is very, very similar. It was four races. I put mid-size. That's when I said we may have to put some qualifiers in here. But I said return to partial in-person racing in Q4. So like November was where I was headed with it mentally. And I explained the reasoning earlier. I think this isn't about the race industry. It's about an international, global, national rollout of the vaccine and then the adoption to it, which directly affects our ability to do this.
So what you're saying is like regular races of, when you say mid-size, over 5,000?
Yeah, over 5,000.
In Q4. And so for you, we both just on May 1st took the after. And so you're saying Q4 is actually October 1st.
Right. And then when we were trying to make qualifiers, I went from Q4 to narrow it down to November. This is okay. What I was doing.
So starting in November, regular races, regular mid-size races, mid-size being defined as over 5,000, regular being it's not just a one-off. There are some of them happening. Let's say that there would be at least, you know, five that month.
Right. Not an anomaly on the calendar where you would be like, oh, this is surprising. But now that is the norm of what we're seeing. Yeah.
And so that's a before after as well. I'm going to take the before on that, Tony. I do think there are enough locations where it is quite likely that that will be happening. And some of those are warm weather locations that do a fair amount of the racing in November and December. So if we're saying like month of November, or like between November and the end of the year, like there are, you know, five races of over 5,000. I actually think that's pretty likely. Some, you know, regional level half marathons, some regional level, you know, marathon festivals that have multi-distance. I, you know, very much think that in-person racing at that scale will be back before late Q4. So I am going to take, now that's not saying in any given municipality or location it will be. Massachusetts might be different than Illinois, might be different than California, might be different than Minnesota, might be different than Texas, than Florida, than Arizona, for sure. But like as far as existing on the national calendar, I'm going to take the before on November 1 for regular races of over 5,000.
Same. I'm also hopeful for before. But wow. Doing the math on paper, that's what seems we're trending towards. But I want to gamble because I'm hopeful. And my resolution for 2021 is to be more positive. So here we are.
Yeah. And so I think we did a really crummy job of defining that one. But so what we're saying, though, is, you know, it was either like we actually framed it two ways, either like five races of 5,000 or more after November 1 before the end of the year. No, but I think what we were saying is we will see the regular reemergence of those mid-size 5,000 person plus events before November 1. So like there will be at least five before then.
Correct.
And yeah, yes to that. We're both taking the before. Cool. All right. I'm going to do the one that I agonized over. And I'm going to tell you what I wrote it down. I scratched something out. I wrote it down again. The other number I wrote down and I thought about changing. I'm going to make an adjustment on the fly right here because I'm not trusting my gut. So what I just adjusted this to is, and this now means that I have changed both numbers since I originally wrote them down. It was originally one U.S. marathon of over 25,000 in 2021. And I actually just changed it. Before we got on this call, I changed one to 1.5. So it was 1.5 US marathons of over 25,000. But just on this call and talking through some things, I actually, what I am going with for this over under number is 1.5 US marathons over 20,000.
Oh, so in the entirety of 2021,
basically
either zero or two Or push.
Oh, no, one. No, 1.5. I set the over-under at 1.5. There is no push.
Oh, let's put it this way.
I will allow there as a push if
one of them... What if it's like a race that's...
If it's 20,000 on the nose.
Yeah, okay.
To the finisher. That would be a... You can take... That would be 1.5. It's not over, but it's not under. That's when I would give you the 1.5. So you really don't want this push. It's saying, will there be 1 or 0 on the under, or will there be 2 or more? On the over 20,000 finisher US marathons.
Oh man.
Yeah, and like you can see how I like agonized over these numbers too. I think I landed on the best one.
Well, if
the variations that I had.
Well, man, I guess it boils down to which majors are happening for the most part, and then the Disney race, right?
Honolulu.
See, the Honolulu one, the only thing that gets me is like, that's a lot of travel. And one of the things that I'm hammering home the most with our team, it's like, this isn't about being safe to travel or having or not having a vaccine. The next hurdle to jump is what people have been mentally conditioned to understand as comfortable and or safe. So like, do they want to be in bubbles? Do they want to be on planes? Do they want to stay at hotels? I think a lot more goes into play rather than just COVID at this point.
I do too. I think that's a big consideration, but I also think that Honolulu, by virtue of being on an island in the middle of the ocean, will be a place that has a better capability, like New Zealand or some of these other small island nations, to, once things federally are a little different, to at a state level, hopefully do a better job of getting things under control. They've been under control a lot of the time compared to other places. And so I think it may be an attractive destination. And also a huge number of their folks are from Japan, which, don't get me wrong, things are not going great in Japan right now, but has generally handled the virus a lot better. And so I think that those possibilities definitely make Honolulu in play. And also, I mean, it usually clears 20,000 by a pretty substantial margin. I mean, right. It varies year to year, but like, you know, it wouldn't have to be at full capacity, eking out every last one, as opposed to like a Marine Corps, you know, some of these other ones, the non-world marathon majors that are in here that are like pretty close to that 20,000 number. I think if my recollection is right, it usually clears that margin by, you know, if it were at 3/4 demand, it would be very, very close to that 20,000 number.
Yeah.
So I think Honolulu has to be a consideration here.
I'm going to go over, I think.
Yeah, over. So I am so torn on this. I don't think Boston gets over. I think the other world marathon majors have a shot at getting over, but I'm not sure. I think Honolulu has a shot at getting over. I don't think Disney does. I don't really think LA does. But so it really comes down to like Honolulu and the other two majors, and then I don't think Marine Corps does a full 20,000. Mm-hmm. It's usually right there at 20,000, sometimes just under anyway. So it's basically saying, do I think like 2 out of those 3 will come in over 20,000? And like, yeah, no, the reason I think this is the right numbers is because I am so torn. I see both sides of the coin. Tony, I want to be the optimist, but I also want us not to pick the same thing on every one. And I couldn't convince myself not to pick the same one as you last time. So I am going to go ahead and take the under and say fewer than 1.5 U.S. marathons of over 20,000 in 2021.
Okay.
There's our difference.
All right. Yeah.
I want you to be right. This is hedging my bets. This is like when you pick a team that isn't your favorite team to go all the way in March Madness. So like when they beat your favorite team, you're like, well, at least they're still in my bracket. This is like, well, at least I would be right. Because being right is very important to me. Yeah. All right, Tony, you've got one more, right?
I do have one more. I'm going to need help putting these qualifiers in there. But the spirit of it is I think that, say, well, let's do it this way. The 5 biggest races that happen in 2021, 4 of them are going to have corrals that go beyond E.
Oh.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Here's the catch, though. Or maybe it's not E. Maybe it's like G or something. But the part that's difficult, that I'm having difficult time with is, well, you can just go A, B, C, D, E, and then do 5 heats. Or you can go, it all depends on the square footage, right? So that's the part I was grappling with. And a little bit going back to what I was saying earlier, this is not a COVID adjustment. This is a new world order of running and racing. People do not want to be nuts to butts in a corral. anymore. Like, not a thing. Nobody wants to be packed in like sardines. Nobody wants to have to pee on a fence because they can't make it to the bathroom. I think we're going to see a readjustment in how start lines work for a better customer experience. So this year is the year that this stuff gets implemented. I think I just need your help establishing what these thresholds are going to be. So say top five that happen in the country could be 20,000, could be 10,000, could be five, could be 500. How do we structure that? I know, but how do we structure this?
Yeah. So you're talking about the number of physical spaces that we put folks into at the start line of a major race that are hard corralled, the number of different ones.
Number of corral, or should we say heat, or just say heat and or, you know what I mean? Or do we go by square footage? Because that would cover both.
Oh God. So when you say square footage, are you saying number of square feet per runner needed, going from like, hey, we've always calculated like we could be super tight at 3.5 up to like, we need 36 square feet per person now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Let's, why don't we do square footage? Because right now the industry standard is 3.5 to 4, right? So
what you're saying is what will, we have to pick a race, and this will be a race that we'll have to be able to check with, or a group of races that we'll be able to check with, what will the average square footage they will change their calculations to for their start line be, square feet per runners? What races do you want to use for this that might give us this information after they do it?
I mean, I want to say New York. I don't know if Ted would tell us.
But we need to have a pool of them, so it's not everyone doing state secrets. So maybe it's the World Marathon. How about this? Any of the top 10 marathons that do happen with that public field of over 5,000, what would the average of their square footage calculations be for number of square feet per runner at the start line? And then we need to determine what that average number is that we want to do the over or the under on.
Yes.
I have a thought on this number.
Let's hear it.
Well, do you have a thought too? I don't want to poison the well.
No, I don't.
All right. So like a lot of us currently do 4 square feet per runner, or 3.5 if packed tight. Some places like to be a little more generous and do 6. All of these are in ranges that you have heard before, right, Tone?
Yes.
All right. It's obviously got to be more. The number that we have heard some right now is when you need 6 feet around you per person becomes 36 square feet per person. I'm not sure that if events have to do that, they're going to be over that 5,000 threshold or happening really. So our range is between where we are now, 6 and 36. And I think that it is likely going to have to be substantially closer to where we are now than to full 36. Just the idea that there's going to be 6 square feet per person is absurd, or, you know, 6 feet around each person is absurd. Frankly, once you put folks in corrals, even, you know, 3 feet or, you know, 2 feet around them in all directions starts being like, well, no, that's a lot of space when you're standing in a crowd. So what I am thinking is where I would want to set this is going out from me, you know, 2 feet from either side, and then just that little bit of extra space, because I am a person who actually takes space as well. So 2 feet from either side, you know, would be 4 feet in both directions from me, which would be, 4 feet deep by 4 feet wide is 16 square feet. So I'm going to set the over under for this at 16.5 square feet.
Ooh, okay. I think it's going to be under. And keep in mind, this isn't just COVID. This is like the new world order of racing. This is how we're going to do corrals pretty much from here on out.
Yeah. And I mean, I actually, you want to know what? I think that's got to be under too. And now that I'm thinking about that, forget, you know, what we basically say right now is if you're doing the 4 feet is here's a foot from each, you know, from your center, each direction, and that's going 2 by 2, which is a 4. I just doubled that in both directions. Mm-hmm. That's not right. What it would really be is again, 2 by 2 from both sides, 4 by 4. I mean, going 2 feet either to the side or forward and backwards. So 4. Yeah, this is a better one. 16 is too much. 8 square feet per person, basically doubling it from that 4, thinking, yep, you know, here is a foot in front of you, a foot behind you, and 2 feet to the side. 8. None of us are going to land at 16.
Correct. I think 8 square feet is probably more comfortable. Yeah. So, yeah,
so over or under 8 square feet for average start line square footage per runner calculations for top 10 2021 marathons.
I mean, I think it's going to have to be over this year. This is almost like a multi-year. Can we parlay this into 2022?
Oh, see, I thought you said you didn't gamble, Tony.
Oh, no, I gamble on the Oscars. You can parlay outfits with wins for categories.
Okay.
No, but, you know, it's a little bit of an unfair one. So we can go into the 16 square feet for 2021 just because of the COVID parameters. But I do want to, like, plant my flag in this that corrals are never going to be the same, and that's amazing.
Yeah, but so you're saying, so hang on, am I hearing you right? I wanted to switch it from 16 to 8, and
well,
what you're saying
makes sense, because right now 32 is what we're required to do.
36.
It's insane. So there's no way that we can just be like, oh, it's going to be 8. You know, 8's like, so where it should go back when we return to racing, but realistically for 2021, because of the current situation, I think maybe we just do 32, which is what's required. This is riveting.
You would take the under on that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would take the under on 16, even for next year as well.
All right, let's set it at 16.
I'll take the under.
I'll take the over.
And what I just realized is the number of start lines that you work gives you a huge advantage, that you design gives you a huge advantage in this category.
The client's going to be like, well, they need 16. I'm like, I think they need 16 and a half, guys. I don't know. I think it's 16 and a half.
We're like Pete Rose right now. Tim Donaghy, the NBA ref, you know, you set the rules of the game and then you rig the game. That's what we're doing right now, is we're Tim Donaghy. This is going to end with us in disgrace. But we have another difference there then, though. I'm taking the under on 16 square feet per person for these start line calculations for major marathons in 2021. You're taking the over. I'm going to create a Google Doc and we'll link to it in the show notes when we post it, so folks can track and see what the propositions were and where we landed on them. And I guess our plan for this will probably be end of the year to check back in, and maybe even throughout the year as we hit some of these dates and landmarks and see who's winning and then who ultimately wins on our over under and all arounder episode name is for our first episode of season 2 of the pod. Tone, did you have any extras that you didn't get to?
I don't. I struggled to find the three that I did bring up.
Yeah. And I had a couple that I was like, well, but these are sad. I was like, top 100 road races folding.
No. Yeah. Positive 2021. Like, and also, we're at 46 minutes, so we're about to, like, ruin our own plan of keeping these banter episodes shorter.
Oh, no, we shot past that a while ago. You're right. But what I'm hearing there, when I hear these, like, podcast directions in my head, I now hear them in the tone of voice of Kirsten. So what I'm hearing is wrap it up. So that's a wrap for this episode of Early Call Time, the first episode of season 2 of the podcast, where we discuss issues and news in the road race industry and get to know some of the people who keep it running. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you listen to your podcasts on. And if you have any questions, comments, guests you would like us to invite, or proposition bets for Tony, please send us an email at earlycalltimepod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening last season, and thanks so much for sticking with us in season 2. We'll catch you bright and early on the next episode of Early Call Time.
Organizing running events is your job. Join Tony and Eli and all their friends on the Early Call Time Pod.